That is a bit of advertising history. In 1940, Pepsi issued the first jingle ever broadcast nationwide. It became a hit record and was translated to 55 languages. Here's another bit of soft drink history that stands out from that time. The 1940s were a hotbed of the cola wars. While Pepsi was selling its 12-ounce bottles for 5 cents, Coca-Cola's containers held half as much. But Pepsi, then based in Long Island City, Queens, was still vying for a larger part of the market. And as part of that effort, CEO Walter Mack led an effort to reach out to black consumers and to integrate young African Americans into his sales force. Mr. Alan McKellar was part of the first African American team to sell Pepsi to black people in the Jim Crow South of the 1940s. He joins me now from his home in St. Louis, Missouri. Hello, Mr. McKellar.
Good morning.
When you hear that jingle, does it bring you back?
Oh, it takes me all the way back to the days when I first came to New York and subsequently became a member of the first black team with Jeanette Mon, and we did a marvelous job throughout America.
Before you joined Pepsi, were you a student? Where'd you live?
I was graduating from college at South Carolina State. And the president called me in and asked me to participate in what appeared to have been a legitimate contest that was being sponsored by Walter Mack of Pepsi-Cola.
An essay contest.
And I had to write an essay on how American youth faces its future.
You said it appeared to be a legitimate contest. What did you find out about it afterwards? Was it just a ruse?
It was legit because I was invited to come up to New York as one of the 20-some finalists of the 1,500 people that had participated in this essay. I was one of the 27 finalists.
And so was Jeanette Mond.
Of course, we subsequently became 2 of 13 winners.
Yeah. Were there any other black finalists or semifinalists in that group of 27?
No, there were no other blacks involved whatsoever.
So you looked at each other, and did you say, well, this is unusual. Usually it's either an all-white world or an all-black world in the 1940s. Did you think something strange was happening?
Not at all, because I grew up with predominantly white friends in South Carolina and Abbeville. However, I couldn't attend school with them. And Jeanette was initially from Worcester, Massachusetts, so she didn't recognize racism as much as other people would have. And being there, we were honored by Mrs. Roosevelt, Mayor LaGuardia, Fannie Hurst, the writer, and many celebrities.
How did you guys go from being essay winners or finalists to actually being approached by Pepsi?
We were asked by Mr. Mack.
Were you surprised at that? Were you gratified?
Well, I was happy.
Yeah.
Thrilled. Because it was one of a kind. No, I didn't know at the time that we were the first blacks to enter the corporate world in 1940. I didn't realize that at that time, but we learned that when we got out into the marketplace.
So how is it explained to you what this sales force would do and what it would be like?
Mr. Mack told us that he wanted us to go out and cultivate sales in the black marketing area. And in effect, there was no basic training given us. We were OJT, on-the-job training, and we tended to do that ourselves.
So what year was this?
1940.
1940. And what was your area at first?
Our first trip was to the state of Texas. And we went down by Pullman. Jeanette was alarmed when the conductor came through the Pullman car area and asked us to pull down the curtains, and she was interested in viewing the sights, but he explained to us if we stopped in some of those small southern cities, they may not like seeing two blacks in a Pullman.
What sort of discrimination did you face in the South in the 40s?
We avoided any type of situations where we would have any difficulty working the southern markets, but we went directly to the black ministers and to the black newspapers where they existed, and they in turn helped us find places to live, and we ate where we stayed, and oftentimes Jenna and I stayed in different locations, but we coordinate our plans with the bottlers every morning.
And what with the bottlers, I guess, that they were either all white or mostly white. What was their reaction?
They were
to
all white.
All white.
Back in those days.
And so were they welcoming to you? Did they just see it as a business opportunity?
In all cases, but one or two where the butler was somewhat of a racist himself, and he didn't want to meet us in the his office, so he wanted to meet us in the back, and I kind of let him know that we would not tend to work in his territory if we had to encounter any problems with him.
Right.
And that would be reported back to Mr. Mack immediately, which in one case that did happen.
And that convinced the butler to change his policies, did it?
Well, after we were so successful, everywhere we went, we were headlined in the black newspaper and treated like celebrities, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And we spoke to the elementary schools, the high schools, wherever that was a university, we spoke to the universities there. Our main objective was to let the young black kids know that there appears to be a move in the right direction of opening up the opportunities for blacks to come into the business world as opposed to teaching school or those few who could become doctors. Those were about the only opportunities available at that time. And we called on the retail outlets as well all over the black markets, and we replaced competition. Coca-Cola in particular was a competitor, and wherever there was a vending machine and using Coca-Cola, we would either move a Pepsi in or move Coke out of the position. So Mr. Woodruff of Coca-Cola was astounded by that because he had already said that he didn't buy the concept of having blacks do anything.
Well, was Coca-Cola seen as a racist drink, or the employees or the company itself seen as racist if Pepsi was progressive and trying to actively get black drinkers?
Well, there, as you go back to that tenure, blacks knew that they were segregated again, so they didn't really give any thoughts along the lines of one or the other being a segregated company. However, later on, there was a boycott against Coca-Cola that wasn't exceptionally successful, but it did have a bearing because it changed Coca-Cola's thinking after many years.
I want to read back a quote from that original essay that you wrote to get that job at Pepsi. You wrote, "Efficient work is still the law of life and the one sure way to meet the challenge of an unbalanced world." Do you still stand by that?
Oh, you're reading my essay.
I've read your essay.
Yeah, I stand by that 100%.
It's got you pretty far, would you say?
Been very fortunate.
Lived
in
many places.
Years to Ernestine McKellar, and we've done a lot, and we tried to transpose this on to young people today, black or white, or anyone who's interested in listening.
Well, Alan McKellar, Pepsi salesman extraordinaire and pioneer, thank you very much, Mr. McKellar.
And thank you so very much, and you'll let me hear from you later.
I certainly will. When's the last time you had a Pepsi?
Yesterday. Wild cherry. But I like Pepsi. Hell, that's all I ever drank.
All right. Well, thanks a lot.
Enjoyed every moment of it.
That interview with Mr. McKellar was really interesting as I talked to him. You know, sometimes we pre-recorded that, so we talk for about 20 or 25 minutes. It gets cut down to 8 or 9. Good stuff gets left out. One of the things we talked about was this guy named Edward Boyd, who was one of the first and most prominent black executives in corporate America. And he founded the team of representatives who went down south. And McKellar actually predated them. But Boyd died last year, and he was just, I mean, he's one of these pioneers that you don't really hear enough about. Walter Mack, who was in charge of Pepsi at the time, was a progressive Jewish man from Queens. Pepsi's headquarters were in Queens. And at the time, he saw two things. He saw what was right, and he said, we have an opportunity to go down south and to really go head-to-head with Coke. Because at the time, Woodruff, who was in charge of Coke, was said to be tied with segregationists. So they did. It's just an amazing story, and you find out little facts like they began advertising to the black community, and they did so with ads that weren't racist, that just showed kind of the black middle class enjoying a Pepsi. And in one of those ads, Ron Brown, who would later become Commerce Secretary, remember him? He died in a plane crash while he was Commerce Secretary. He was the little boy in one of the ads. So really an interesting interview, and we have more about it on the blog.